This interview is being conducted with Corporal Robert L. Curry by Master Sergeant Robert H. Oliva at Marine Corps Schools, Quantico, Virginia, on 21 December 1965. The subject of this interview is combat patrols and is unclassified. Corporal Curry, state your name, grade, and service number. What were your duties while in Vietnam, and what period did you serve in the billets that you're going to tell us about?
My name is Corporal Robert L. Curry. Service number is 2027414. I was a squad leader with Delta Company, 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines. And I served in Vietnam from January to September 1965.
Discuss Marine Corps tactics involved in both night and day patrols.
While patrolling in Vietnam, when we first got to Vietnam, we did most of our patrolling in the daytime. But later on, especially in the summertime in June and July and August, General Walt, commander of the 3rd Marine Division, had us patrolling at night, which we did about 85% of our patrolling at night. And night patrol was pretty scary, actually, in Vietnam. It was a lot different than in the daytime, because we had no real concern over being brought under heavy fire by the Viet Cong in the daytime. They mostly struck at night. But while on patrols, we operated as a company when we first got to Vietnam and in the months of April and May, but then as the months went on, we started operating in platoons and squads. Company was too big, and they could see us coming as a company. They'd know we were in the area.
Discuss Marine Corps tactics involved in search and clear operations.
In the search and clear operations, when we first started operating in Vietnam, we'd operate as a company and would set in a platoon on one end of a small village, maybe using it as a blocking force, and would send two other platoons through the village searching and clearing the houses. You might find VC in the caves, our weapons in caves. And most of the time we took any prisoners of war. We would take these people, they were suspects actually, would take them back to the Vietnamese regional headquarters, and the interpreters back there would take over from there, so we didn't have too much to do. We never really found out whether they were Viet Cong in most cases. They were just military age, and they weren't with the regional or popular forces and where they should have been. And we found quite a few weapons in these villages, and we received quite a bit of sniper fire in these search and clear operations.
Can you go into detail concerning ambushes and layout patrols for us, please?
In ambushes, now, of course, which would all be at night, we'd set up in the valleys maybe 10 to 15 miles south or southwest of Da Nang, and we'd move out maybe sometime after 2200 at night, and sometime maybe after 2400 we'd be near the ambush site, and we'd usually be in a platoon size and would split up to squad sizes and set up ambushes maybe a mile to 2 miles apart each squad. And most of the time with our automatic weapons, we'd set up in an L-type ambush on well-used trails coming out of the mountains.
What affiliation did you have with helicopter operations?
With helicopter operations, about 80% of the times we were in the field on either search and clear operations or day and night patrols. or even ambushes. We were taken to the field by helicopters and usually picked up by helicopters. And usually in a platoon size, sometimes in a company size, and would leave a platoon back to secure the helicopter landing zone so that we could use the same landing zone when we returned from the operation. The operations were conducted at different times of the day. Time didn't really matter except at night. The only time we'd use helicopters at night if someone was wounded, just for a medical evacuation. But different times during the morning hours, the early dusk hours at night, were probably the better times to go to the field to catch them unaware. And then we'd move most of the night, and then we'd set in and move again before daybreak. And this way catching the Viet Cong a little off guard.
Did your unit operate in a tactical area of responsibility?
Yes, we operated in a tactical area of responsibility.
What specific measures were employed to control this tactical area of responsibility?
To control the tactical area of responsibility was mostly consistent patrolling in squad sizes, or at least 8 men size patrols. And this was mostly just in front of our positions. While we weren't in the field patrolling, we had certain positions around Da Nang for the security of the base. And these patrols wouldn't move out maybe any more than 2,000 meters at night. All this patrolling was done at night. And that was about the biggest thing that we used for the control of the tactical area responsibility.
How far did your patrol penetrate into the area of responsibility?
At certain times, we didn't patrol too far. Most of our night operations, we tried to stay within 10 to 15 miles of the Da Nang airstrip. But some of our day operations, we moved out even further across some of the higher mountains, probably closer to Laos than in the Pacific Ocean.
Going back to the ambushes and Leo patrols, can you tell us in detail how you set up a night ambush, how you place your automatic weapons and such?
Well, on a certain patrol in August of 1965, we moved out as a platoon out of the TAOR. And we were moving about 2,200, and we split up, the platoon split up in squads to try and reach their ambush sites sooner and with making less noise. We moved about 8 to 10 miles where our ambush site was located. And at one time, my squad ran into one of the other squads, but we were very fortunate with some of the people we had over there. They were pretty careful, they weren't jumpy. And we got out to these ambush sites. We set up for the night, and at this certain time, we had set up an L, but we could never be sure which way to set the L up, because we weren't sure if the enemy had already moved out of the mountains, down into the villages, or whether they were coming back from the villages into the mountains and we'd catch them in the morning. So we had to be very flexible, and we were never sure which side of some of the trails might be 20 to 30 foot apart, and there might be 6 or 8 trails going up one valley. So sometimes we could, even in the dark at night, they could be 1,500 meters away from us in the same valley, and we would never know they were there.
Can you discuss, from your particular point of view, the influence of Vietnam weather and terrain on personnel, to include such factors as physical condition, morale, and the like?
Well, I'm not sure if the influence on the weather and terrain had much to do with the morale of the troops. They were over there doing something they knew had to be done. It wasn't a situation where morale would be low, as in a field problem. Morale was on a pretty high peak at all times, I think. Troops were tired, of course, because of the mountains and the jungle were were real dense compared to the Philippines or Okinawa or any of the other countries I've ever been in the Far East. The physical condition of the troops is very important. We had a lot of troops in the battalion I was in and some in the company I was in that were not capable of taking the heat. Sometimes the temperature would be up to about 125 degrees Fahrenheit. And a lot of these troops were passing out from heat prostration. And this is something to be considered, I think, of these other battalions that go over there that are coming from maybe a cold climate and going right into this heat. And it's pretty hot in Vietnam year-round, as I was in right up near the North Vietnam, about 85 miles from North Vietnam, Da Nang is. And it was about 90 degrees there in January when I arrived.
Thank you, Corporal Murray, for participating in this interview.